All right. It looks like the recording is now going. So welcome to the, it's now October 3rd, External API ONAP virtual meeting. So on today's agenda, let me pull this up. So bear with me for a moment. Okay, I'll share this. So can you see my screen?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. So a few items on the agenda. So of course, please join the ONAP modeling team. Modeling subcommittee now has a new email list. If you haven't already joined, you know, this is the link for signing up. Please join the email list. By doing so, I believe you also become a member of the subcommittee. We probably need to clarify what that means, but all the email communications are going to go through this list for the modeling subcommittee. So please join. We're going to start with a JIRA review. Matthew, we'll have you do that. We can touch base about where we are with the brainstorming for Dublin. Kevin, I kind of copied this from last week. Do you have any Informato sync up that you want to go through?
Yes, just specific to the state model there.
Okay. So we'll kind of keep that. Do you want to discuss VEST at all, or?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Some insight and guidance would be appreciated, especially if someone like Nigel happens to join, who I think has some insight here.
Yep. And I saw Jesse send an email on that as well.
Yeah. Interpretations are welcome.
Yep. And so we had a continuation of the interlude discussion, but I think 2 weeks ago, Mehmet said he's out for the next 2 weeks and won't be able to join. So this is the second week Mehmet is out, so we'll continue that discussion next week. So I think it would be fruitful. And Manoj, if we have a few minutes at the end, if there's any status update you want to report there. But we'll have a more detailed discussion next week when Mehmet is able to join and come back. Does that sound good? Any other items for the agenda today, or does that look fine? Okay, hearing none, let's proceed to the next item, which is the JIRA review. And I'm going to stop sharing. Matthew, if you want to share anything with JIRA or talk about M4 status.
Yes, I'm coming. Sorry, I got some connection problem. Slow.
No worries.
Okay. I think this one, yes. There's not much in the JIRA. Can you see my screen? Yes?
Yes. Thank you.
There's one concern in the JIRA, I don't know if OM container restart is still an entry in progress. I should check that, because I think everything has been fixed since last week. But we still have so for JIRA, I think that's all, and maybe it's already fixed. I just have to check the stability of the container. Concerning the development, we still have pairwise testing to check. We were not yet able to do that that pairwise testing with SDC, SO, and AI. Due to installation program inside our environment, Orange context, in fact. Because we do not have integration test with the SDC and AI and SO available in the continuous integration, so that we are not able to feel that this pairwise testing. That's why we want to reproduce it inside the Orange Lab with a master branch. I think we are very close to solve this pairwise testing. Maybe Adrian, you've already tested, and you have, I think that you have an integration test with SO.
Yeah, no, we've upgraded the lab to Casablanca master. So what we did for CCVPN was we integration tested with SDC, SO, ANAI, but they were off containers that were based off the Beijing release because it was for the ONS demo. So we have to repeat those tests now using Casablanca master Dockers of each SO. SDC, ANAI. So we haven't finished, integration testing in terms of the Casablanca masters, which is what we need to do next. But we're upgrading the lab to the Casablanca master at the moment. But once that's done, we should redo the test that we did, and hopefully, fingers crossed, not find too many issues. But that's the next phase for the testing of retest the CCVPN use case using Casablanca master. Mm-hmm.
So yes, we are both in the same situation.
Yeah.
Cross our fingers, you said.
Yeah.
Yes. I think that's all for a part. Thankfully, it's more quieter now after the M4. But the problem might be the integration with the Casablanca component. Maybe we will have some surprise, but not yet. That's all for the Jira part, I think. Except that if Adrian, you have some items to add, or you want to open some new ticket?
No, not right now for the tickets that we're going to. Well, Marius is after starting on a ticket for the Dublin release, which is the schema one, the EXT 105 that we delayed to Dublin. So Marius has started on the design and code for that. But from a Casablanca perspective, we don't have any currently, anyway, don't have any open Jira issues. Hopefully once we've got the full lab up on Casablanca, that we can finish off our integration testing and hopefully not find any new issues. But yeah, so but for the issues that we're going to, are the gyros that we will be working on next are planned more for the Dublin release.
So that's all on the, I think. We can move forward to the next item.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Thank you, Adrian.
Thank you, Adrian.
No problem.
Okay, so the next item we had was the brainstorming for Dublin. And we share. I just kind of want to remind people where we are with this. Share. Of course, I'm in edit mode, so we'll see how this works. Go to link. So I put the links in here. So we have created wiki pages for the Legato and Interlude brainstorming. You can either click on the minutes or they're here under the Casablanca workspace. You'll see Legato work and Legato high level requirements. And this is kind of the workspace for working those Dublin requirements. You'll also see a space here under Interlude, the same kind of thing, draft Interlude high level requirements. We probably should put draft in here too. So to make it consistent, I just noticed that. All right, I'm now just gonna save it that way. Okay, so what we did here is pretty much had the material that we had from the minutes. We have a few spaces that we need to kind of fill in. You see, there's some headers that are empty, but the Dublin requirements are mainly found in this section here. It says Dublin requirements, and you can expand that. And this is pretty much the copy of what we had in our minutes. This is now available. So what I'm asking folks to do here is review these. If you want to use the comments, I don't know if everyone knows how to use inline comments, but you have to be logged in to use them. So please make sure you're logged in, because usually the problem you have with the inline comments is when you're not logged in. So if I go to a place and I highlight a section like here, I can go to this little comment and where it says add inline comment, this little bubble. And I click on that and I can add my comment here. Like, please change to wiki page. And then I can save my comment. Then other people can come in here and reply to the comment. You can reply to your own comment. You can come in. Let's say you're reviewing this and someone also made a comment that you were going to make anyway. You could like the comment, so you can see other people have liked it. And when you change it, you can go ahead and resolve the comment. So then it kind of moves into the resolve category. So the comment, you'll notice, disappears from here, but it's still if on this dot 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 menu. The resolved comments, you can have them shown here, and you can if I say, oh, that wasn't resolved, I can reopen it. You can actually click reopen, and hopefully thanks for reopen. I don't know why it's not working now. My Firefox has been having a little issues, so it might be part of it. So it's a nice way of providing comments, so please review these, provide any comments. I think Manoj, we're gonna. Yeah, I think that's what happened. My someone showed me this little trick of resetting the proxy.
So, Andy, is this what you were just showing? Is this Dublin work or Casablanca work?
So this is for Dublin.
Because I see it's under Casablanca on the left.
Yeah, so it's our Casablanca workspace, but these are our high level requirements for Dublin. So maybe we want to change.
I just want to name that somewhere. Yeah,
that's a good point. Let's do that now. If everyone's good with that. And on this one. So what I'm asking folks to do is please go in, if there's any additional requirements that you want listed, please fill them out, but highlight them with a comment saying that you added them. If you have any comments on the existing requirements, please go ahead and change that. What we'll do is have another status next week. I don't think there was any changes in Legato, and I said we'll have more of the interlude discussion next week. So if there's additional things. Oh, this is actually a good way to do it too, is using different colors. We can go through and have a more detailed discussion, but on interlude next week as well. But if you want to, before the meeting, if you want to provide some comments, feel free to use the wiki pages to do that now that we have them all on the wiki. And that's all I had on this topic. Does anyone else have anything to add? All right. Moving right along. So I'm just going to say in the minutes, please review and use inline. Okay. Next item is the information model sync up. So I'm going to stop sharing. And Kevin, if you want to You talk about the service order model, or you talk about service order model, or just you said state model primarily, right?
Specific with respect to the service order model.
Yeah.
I think there was the request to try to put together a state diagram.
Yep.
Within the Papyrus environment.
Okay.
Okay, so I did spend my famous little bit of time, and all I did, frankly, was I took what was in the external API document, at least as a starting point. So here was a state diagram for an order. I'm not here to justify if this is the right process or not. I assume you all have already done that. I will probably have to talk to Jesse or somebody just to see exactly where I should put this within the Papyrus model. But what you can see is within the service submodel, which is the same place where the present class diagram for a service order is, you can see I basically replicated the diagram that Ludovic had already put together. Now, Nigel, happy to work with you or anyone else offline. I was not able to use, maybe I'll back up, within the actual service order model,
yes.
We have for service order items, we have a state of
yes.
enumeration order state, of acknowledged in progress, pending, held, canceled, all these different things.
Yes.
And if we bounce over to the state model, those are indeed, I didn't use Asami. I don't know if we should or shouldn't for state machine type diagram. So I basically use the same.
Yeah, I think that's okay. We haven't got any standard on that, Kevin.
So okay. Okay. So I basically followed what Ludovic did. And I certainly yeah. didn't see any way that I could use the class enumerations directly.
That was within, my point, actually. That was my point, Kevin, that I'd had trouble doing that too. So I said you can get okay. the diagram aligned, but it doesn't seem to bridge between the models. I can look further. I'd only done a little bit of work with the state machines, actually, but I could look further at that.
Okay.
Because it seems a strange decoupling of critical, yeah. critical aspects of the model. So yeah, no, yeah. I'll push it further. So it seems like you can draw the diagram in the same way. You can get at least the model, the diagram captured in Papyrus, and so on.
Exactly. So that I've done, as I said, maybe not for this call, but there's the question. Mm-hmm. You know, if we have the submodel, we have diagrams associate. You know, we have these different packages under a submodel. And so I'm frankly yeah. not sure where I'm supposed to put this in terms of those packages, but that's a minor detail. But at any rate, we do have the diagram, and for the most part, it was fairly straightforward.
Yeah, that's the sort of first critical step, but there are a set of further steps that need to be taken to make this right on that. So yeah, okay, I'll see if I can dig a bit more, Kevin.
So Andy, if there isn't any specific questions, as I said, if it's questions on content, then we need to, you know, that needs to probably go a little further back, you know, to the that external API diagram that is, as Nigel said, we at least have it captured in Papyrus. I'll work with Jesse or figure out the right place to put it. I can certainly post it somewhere.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I was going to ask you if you wouldn't mind doing that, at least, yeah, maybe we can drop it into, and I'll send you a link, the workspace, kind of the contributions.
Yeah, if you send me, because this may be getting, I'm happy to also to post it in the modeling service information model, but I don't know if this is really information model material, so it may fit a little better somewhere in the external API wiki. But whatever's fine.
Yep, I'm sending you a link now. And then when you do that, just let me know, and I'll link it into the minutes too.
Okay. So there is that. Then there's the other discussion that we touched on last time, where advice is welcome. Nigel and you and a few others, I sent an email.
Sorry, may I ask a question about the life cycle? There's a plan to make a state diagram for the item, the item of the service order, maybe, because this one concerns only the service order, but there probably will be a state diagram for the items also, no?
Yeah, so this is tied to, you should be seeing a Word document. And this was a Word document someone else put together. I believe it was Ludovic Roberts.
Mm-hmm.
And within this, he had put together, and of course, there's a number of things talked about in here, and I'm not the one to speak to it. But within this, we have a service order API kind of a class diagram. So this, I have modeled in Papyrus to some degree, and Ludovic and I and Andy have met on this a time or two. And so that has already been shared. Then there was a request last week to also put in into Papyrus, as you just heard Nigel say.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking for it now. Did I already pass it?
Okay.
So here's just a lifecycle diagram for a service order. So this is specific to order item states.
Mm-hmm.
Not going too fast, but not going too slow, you can see in the class diagram, here's the service order item. Service order item has a state. The state is of type order state. Order state is an enumeration. So there are the enumerations. And then very quick, early this morning, is a redraw of the diagram that was already depicted here, but it's in Papyrus.
Okay. Sorry, I didn't have the context, the previous context. Sorry.
Sure.
Okay. And it's the same for, to answer the question, it's the same as the service order, but except the partial state, of course.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
And Kevin, can I just while you're on this diagram, are you doing this for the entire information model of ONAP, or is it just, you know, I'm just looking at other things that you have here. You have NS deployment flavor. The reason I ask is that, you know, for example, ANAI has a service resource and it has state, and then we kind of map from that. Is there something in Papyrus where I can see other states machines other than just service order? I just more of interest for myself, and I'm not sure if how much is being modeled in Papyrus. Do you know?
So for the modeling subcommittee. We have started moving material, trying to do development of the information model within Papyrus. And so this is a fairly new endeavor. If you go to the modeling subcommittee, and Andy, if you want, I can go there quickly. It just depends how far we want to explore.
Yeah, go ahead. I think we have time.
So here's the modeling subcommittee, and I will log in. And I'm not the authority here by any means, but you can see under this, there's an R2 modeling workspace, R3 modeling workspace, and I just created the R4 modeling workspace, I believe, yesterday. So under R3, as an example, you will also see there's a service information workspace. There's a resource information model respect. So for the moment, I'm going to go into service. And under service, we talk about kind of three stages for an item being developed. It can be in the input stage, which means, you know, I'm just sharing it. We haven't discussed it yet. There's the discussion stage, and there's the clean stage. And we're working on clarifying what these mean and what is needed to transition from one to the other. But as an example, then, under the discussion stage. Here is a design time service information model or service order. So this is where I took what we just looked at, outputted it, did an output to GenDoc, and then turned it around and dropped it into here. So kind of like Andy was saying earlier, someone can look at this, they can comment on it. If they have an issue, use online comments, and hopefully at some point we will call this clean. So there's some work going on in service. Network service descriptor is one area that's being worked on that has not been agreed to as far as I'm concerned. If we go into the resource space, that's probably been a little more active and a little more developed. So you can see there is again, similar things in that there's clean versions and discussion versions and there's stuff there. So this is all a work in progress. The Papyrus model is available. If you want to download it and take a look, we have editors for different subdomains. I am not normally the editor of the service domain, but given the Chinese holidays, I am the editor temporarily while the normal editor is on holiday for the specific intent of developing some things in service order, then I plan to hand it back.
Okay. No.
So if that helps.
Yeah, no, that helps definitely.
Okay. Is it okay if I any other questions on the service order and the related state machine work before I hop briefly to VES? Okay, so on the topic of VES, I believe last week we had a discussion where we talked about things like the VES specification has everything as data types, but the spec and the information model do not have to match perfectly as part of what we said. We also said that some things that they modeled as data types could perhaps better be modeled as classes, at least within the information model. We also talked about the fact that they don't follow ISAMI, and from some implementation views, they cannot. You would not get a valid answer. But we in the information model could follow ISAMI, and as you go to implementation, obviously some translations can occur, and that's okay. So one of the things that I did since last week, without too much pain, let me just find the right diagram here. What I did was I converted the high-level domains all to I'm confused now. Okay, this was what I was looking for. So I converted those high-level domains to classes from data types. So what you're seeing here, not sure what happened to that one. But at any rate, we have an event. An event then has via composition, has a common event header. It has exactly one of those, as you can see. Then depending on the domain, so the event header has an attribute called domain, and that domain is has an enumeration that basically has things such as fault and heartbeat and measurement and all those things. So if that domain as an example was a fault, then you would also have zero or one of these various classes. One of them is fault. So if the domain is fault, then you will also could have a fault class. So all of these classes will be related back to exactly one event. But a given event may or may not have all of these. You know, there we can perhaps put a constraint on this to say you can only have one of these, but in this little scenario I'm speaking to, you would have a fault class. And as I said, I don't know what happened to why that name was gone. So that's basically as far as I got. And then the email that I sent out was to say, what criteria can we use as we drill a little, well, maybe I'll back up for a moment. Just as a comment, basically, you know, and Nigel, we dialogued on this a little bit, but basically all I did was I created a class, and then I could take the material that was in the data type and do a copy, you know, just basically, I'll use this as an example. I was able to highlight all that and then just turn around and drag and drop it into the class that I wanted to drop it into, and that worked fine. The only minor fallout that I see is, I think from an Asami view, interestingly enough, and we'll take fault as an example, Asami says any descriptions or comments you put in, you should put them in applied comments. Well, whenever I dragged and dropped from a data type entity to a class entity, it appears that it puts the comments, you know, it did copy the comment over, but that comment that describes the class, it put that into owned comments rather than the applied comments.
And that's interesting, Kevin. We could look at that. Yeah, we could look at that.
And so I don't, it's like, well, wouldn't it be cool if I could just somehow move it from one to the other? And I don't think
it's correct. Yet.
So I think I'll just have to go in and, you know, I can copy the text.
Yeah, I feel it should be movable. Actually, it's interesting you've got that. Maybe we can just discuss that offline briefly, Kevin, just to tell me what you did, and I'll see if I can find another way of doing it. Or you can show it now if you want to do it.
Yeah, well, I can obviously do this manually, it's interesting that on the copy, it's copying it from an applied comment in one entity, and it drops it into an owned comment in the other.
Peculiar, yeah. Okay.
So at any rate, so going back then, if we take measurements, and measurements is one of the more complex areas with VAS, and I'm not the expert in VAS, have to talk to someone else, but we have all these data types, and some of them have just a couple of attributes in them. Others, like disk usage, have a very large number. And so the email I sent out was, well, how do we figure out from an information model view which ones we should turn into classes, which ones we keep as data entities. And so to that end, so this is the email I sent out originally. Jesse replied, and I've seen this, I've thought about it, I think I understand, at least academically, the difference between data types and classes. You know, so a data type is basically just the values. And if you have, and you can't have two values exactly the same. If you have a class, then you can have two instances with the same value. That's basically differentiated by the object instance identifier. So I read that, I think I understand, but then if you apply it to a real world situation, part of how I could read that is to say, hypothetically, I could have two events. Those two events could both be message type events. They could then have perhaps, you know, pick your area, CPU usage, that hypothetically could have exactly the same values, right?
Yeah, that's right, Kevin. I mean, I think if you apply a data type to a particular attribute or something and apply the same data type to another attribute, clearly the instances of use can have different values.
Exactly.
You just can't, if you had a data type all by itself filled in, then it hasn't got an identifier, and therefore you don't do that though. So
But at a very minimum, even if we keep these as data types, what happens is I have some variable, some attribute, you know, let's call it X or, you know, whatever. It's probably CPU usage within some other data type of which is of this type. It's either of this type or it is a class and it has an association to the parent. So it still kind of boils down to, you know, I look at all this, I read those words, difference between data types and classes, and it's like, okay, let's apply it. Which of these do we keep as data types?
You've still got the same problem. Yeah, that's right.
So I tend to say maybe I should just convert all these to classes and be done. I'm not sure.
You can then have instances of them. The question is, do you want to have instances of them that are standalone, independent, or do you want them simply to be definition of other attributes?
Exactly.
And that's a simple question.
So Nigel, if we just want to create like a grouping of attributes that you can attach onto some kind of counter, right? Just saying, here's counter values.
If you want a group of attributes to attach, then it needs to be a class, really. If you want to define an attribute that's got that grouping in it, then the data type is the right thing. It's just two distinct ways of attaching it. One is the attribute is in the thing, and it uses the data type. The other is it's detachable. So, I mean, if you've got the class, then you could move that set of values to something else. That's the distinction. So, if I've got a set of values... an instance of
right. Well, of it's not even moving. It's like Kevin's highlighting here. You have measurements, but I might want to attach different things that I measure, right? And they could be different groupings of measurements
for a specific
measurement. So one measurement might have disk usage and CPU usage. The other might have storage usage, memory usage, and CPU usage.
Right, but I could still have an attribute in the event called CPU usage and then make the data type CPU usage data type beforehand. But then have a list of those attributes where I can have them composed in this way and then have optional compositions where I have an attribute that's referenced.
But the problem I think might be if you have new sets of counters that you want to attach onto the measurement and make it extensible. And maybe a better ways to detach those groupings that you can create later on too.
You've got more versatility with the class. Yes, I agree. Because in the data type situation, you've got to have an attribute in the thing that has got the type of that data type, and therefore you need to add an attribute to the thing you want to extend, which means it's been incremented. It isn't unchanged. But in the class one, if you want to reference the other class, you've got to add a new pointer unless you use some generalized pointer mechanism where it's a list of those things and you've got some polymorphism or something equivalent to that where I just point at stuff and I've got a big long list of stuff and then the stuff can be any one of those things, in which case the class hasn't changed at all. It's got the pointer and the pointer's generalized, and then you can add on as many bits of stuff as you want to as long as they're all seen as stuff. So then you could get a more extensible thing without changing the class. Or you can use reverse pointers where the thing that's been added points at the thing it's added to, rather than the, in which case you then don't see it in the instance. But of course, then you've got to either got to refactor it in the realization, in which case the pointer has been added to the the class, or you've got to look up, which is then wasteful.
Right, or each thing that you're adding uses the identifier of the base class as part of its identifier.
If you had a generalized class of property group or something, then you specialize to these things and had a point that generalized class from the main class. You can just have a list of those, and then you can make it extensible essentially by doing that. Currently, as long as they're all of that,
right,
the subclasses of that, then you can add as many as you want to as subclasses of that without changing the instances of the entity that point at them. So because they've just got pointers to the generalized class, randomly called properties for this discussion.
Yeah,
which so, you can't do with benchmarks. You can't do that with data, really.
Yeah, so I think with measurements, especially the groupings of measurements that may be added and changed later on, I think it's, you know, doing the class mechanism might be better than encoding it inside data structures in the class itself.
Yeah, yes.
So if we take that as an example, and so we say we have measurements. Measurements is a domain. So we you know, on the header it says, yep, here's an event, and the event is of type measurement. Therefore, we will also have then an association between events and measurements. Measurements then has an attribute called huge page array of type huge pages. And then if we pop over, huge pages is on here somewhere. And so it happens to be this. And of course, we have the same thing with disk usage or memory usage or file system usage. So I think what we're recapping is to say, let's go ahead and turn these all into classes. And then basically we'll have an association between the measurement class and each one of these new classes with an appropriate cardinality. And obviously at data model implementation time, they can choose to put those back into data types if they want, or keep them as classes however they see fit. Is that correct? Is that a fair recap?
Well, I was on Andy's extensibility thing. I was concerned if I add then to this, then I'm disrupting what is if I'm modeling, if I'm adding a new batch of measurements I want to keep separate. I don't know whether not looking at the specific detail, I'm not sure whether that was the right consideration for this case or not, Kevin, because I thought if, as Andy was saying, if I want to add more stuff to the event body, then it's I don't want to keep having to change the event body to add more stuff to it. So having sort of, as I said, a class called generalized stuff and then having subclasses for each of those things might give you a more extensible structure. I'm not a big fan of subclassing, but in that particular case, it seems to give some value.
Avinash.
Yeah,
hi. Hi, Nigel. And every relation that you have shown in the class, okay, will it be always composition or there will be some composition and aggregation? Both are applicable.
That's another interesting question.
At the moment, I went with composition, thinking that if we go back to the high level view, I'm not going to have a SIP signaling class, at least at the moment, to my knowledge, without having the event. The event has SIP signaling. You know, it's not an attachment. It's you got to have an event, then you get the SIP signaling class. My thought is that this could not exist without the event parent.
Like fault is there. Okay. Fault can exist without an event, actually.
It depends what this is. If it is literally the structure of the information about fault that appears in an event, then it can't exist without an event. If it's
exactly
the definition of some properties of faults, some of which appear in an event and some of which don't, then that's a different situation. And I think if Kevin's literally modeling the structure of the event itself, then it is a composed thing. You're literally defining the structure of the units of content of the event here and saying it could be this, it could be that, and in which case then composition is right. But it is also right that clearly that is an extract from something else. So the fault exists in its own right. It's got properties, and then an extract of those properties get stuck in the event. So,
because I feel like actually, okay, like syslog and all those things, okay, they will exist on its own, okay, and then can be composed together to bring to an event, actually. That is what aggregated together to create an event. Some information might not be the complete information, right?
Right, right.
Yeah, and maybe as I socialize this with Rich Erickson and Alok, who kind of built that spec, you know, I can verify that conversation, but I was tending to think, you know, as you said, if there's a bunch of fault information, they already have it, and then they're just associating it to this event and shooting it off somewhere, then changing it to aggregation is appropriate.
Yeah, so maybe, yeah, that's a thing to consider is aggregation. I think that might be a way to work it.
One of the challenges, you might not
pull all. Not all aggregation, but there will be, I think there are both composition and aggregation applicable in many of the subclasses that is there. That is my view, actually, okay, but we can discuss.
And it might not be an aggregation of the whole other thing either, because the depending on how it's structured, some of the elements of the class to say fault might not be sent in the event because they're not things I want to notify about. So
So I think step one is, I think we're all agreeing that representing each of the different things that were very complex data structures and classes is the right approach. Is that something we have consensus on? And now we're talking about how do we compose things out of those classes?
Yes.
And the other thing, when you say very complex, Andy, well, what is a
well, that one is. Let's look at some others.
More long than complex.
long. That's a better
because
word.
Because what might be a problem is there might be complexity hidden behind the length. Actually, it may not be just one thing. It may be several things that have been concatenated into a long list of stuff.
It's a heck of a data structure.
Yes. Yeah. And of course, I was thinking
that instead of directly going into the class relationship, we should just consider the classes, then we can discuss and what is the type of relationship. Yeah. That would be a good idea, actually.
Does that sound good, Kevin, as a approach forward?
Certainly, if we take measurements as an example, I am fine with perhaps just converting all these to classes and then making them relationships. And certainly we can entertain, you know, a saying they're all, you know, Nigel, if I pick up on what I think I was hearing, we could say we could have a subclass called, measurement details, and make all of these then a subclass of measurement details, and then the measurements class at the highest level could then have a relationship, you know, to measurement details, of which all of these are subclasses. We could certainly do that.
This is a good idea. Definitely a good idea, actually.
Or alternatively, what we do is we have a diagram like this one, where we have an event that has, whether it's aggregation or composition, a relationship to all these things. We have the measurements that then has a aggregation or composition relationship to all these things. So those are, I assume, our two options.
There are several more as well. As you look at these things, are these things actually really single things, or are they multiple things? And then is this lump here, data type here, actually an aggregation of other pieces which were in another part of the model that then, back to the point that Amnesh made, that would be used for other aspects too, where maybe the disk usage thing is a set of pieces which are drawn from other classes where there are other properties, and those other classes that are not reported in disk usage. So is it as complex? It probably is as complex as that, unfortunately. But do you want to go that far? Maybe that's the right thing.
So I think we're saying, as a first step, we can convert them into classes and then maybe come back around and talk about the relationships, whether it's and maybe if it's a mix of subclasses, aggregation and composition or whatever. So I can.
When we were doing the equivalent thing, because there's a couple of other twists in this. When we were doing the equivalent thing in ONF, we started off with a fairly rich multiple classed model of some abstraction of the structure of the particular thing that was being monitored. We refactored that into a much more compact class model, which was related to what we wanted to report about the thing that was, you know, so we didn't need all that structure, it was all irrelevant, it was just, you know, bags of properties against named items you wanted. But then we essentially made those conversational because we were talking only about modeling the interface and it wasn't relevant. They were used somewhere else. In that one view, the only place they were used is in that one structure. So we'd be careful with what we're modeling. We're modeling literally only the interface and we're not caring about anything else. All we want to do a view from the interface and they can become compositional. Like we're modeling a richer suite of things than their aggregation in that context. But when we come to code it, they become nested structure and i.e. composition in the actual interface propagation. So we played around a lot with that in ONF, and you end up going the wrong way several times, unfortunately, if we end up with the right answer probably. Because my concern is it really depends upon which view you've got as to whether they're composition or aggregation, and because fundamentally they're all views. Even when I look at any item, I'm just taking a view of it from a perspective. So we've decided whether you're trying to do the rich, detailed underlying model, in which case you need to break these up into lots of little pieces, or you're just doing a model of the interface, in which case they're composition, or something between, in which case they're somewhere between those two extreme points, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. I think it is.
Yeah.
So I think, and Andy, I know we're about out of time, but I think what I'm hearing is I'll convert these to classes. Yeah. I may play a little bit with associations between them, but maybe then we can pick this up and entertain between the parent class, which is in this case measurements, and the related classes as we see on this page. We can do some examining to see what's most appropriate in aggregation, a composition, simple association, a subclass, and some of the benefits that go with that, and can explore that a little bit more. And I'll certainly look at some of the experience you all have that lessons learned that we can apply here.
Yep, sounds good. All right. Thank you. And Kevin, just a reminder, when you have the diagram for the state, if you would upload that, that'd be good.
I will. Before we shut this call down, I'll grab that link.
Okay.
And yes, I will do that.
If you want to talk more,
I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, actually, I didn't understand the applicability of this. Is it for internal ONAP consumption, or we will be using this for external API, probably for the service problem management or service fault management?
Are you talking about VES? The VES discussion was kind of a side discussion. So we had this question about VES modeling for events. But I think really we're just trying to go through a general modeling discussion as to the applicability of using data structures versus classes for such things. So we had a little time that we started on this discussion last week, and Nigel had time available, so we allotted some time for that. We're not ruling out that these types of items in VES could be made available through external API in the future. So we haven't ruled that out. It was just a more general modeling discussion with respect to VES, though, if that helps.
Okay.
And thank you for the time to discuss that.
You're welcome. I knew we had to push it. And I knew it was going to hit other things as well. So it's, I do believe that, some of the metrics and performance information and event type things, as we move through fault and performance, we'll have to evaluate, how do we utilize what's inside ONAP and how do we transform it to an external representation. So I believe, a lot of things we discussed here will be applicable as we move to exposing fault and performance information across external API as well. All right. So we're about out of time. thank you all. We're going to continue the interlude discussion next week. Mehmet will be back, so that'll be good. And if you have any other items for the agenda next week, just shoot me an email and I'll get them on there. Thank you all, and have a good rest of your week.
Thanks.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Andy.
Take care. Thanks, Andy. Oh, goodbye.